Good afternoon, and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esti Chandler. As the world watches, Israelis demonstrating by the tens of thousands, fighting to maintain an apartheid system of government, which provides a form of democracy for Jews only. And as the Biden administration's request of the Israeli government not to continue to expand and build settlements in occupied territory is met with the announcement of 5,000 additional units, and as settler violence, home demolitions, and provocative Israeli raids against Palestinians continue to increase in frequency. Last week, the Biden administration announced both a meeting with the Israeli prime minister and the decision to sign a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with Israel on including them into the U.S. visa waiver program. As Jim Zogby wrote this week, there are well-documented reports from U.S. citizens of being harassed, detained, and denied entry to Israel by Israeli officials. During these incidents, Arab Americans have been strip-searched, questioned for hours about family and property histories, and even forced to provide access to their social media accounts. For months, Zogby and others have been engaging with the U.S. State Department about the push by Israeli and American officials to allow Israel admission into the visa waiver program, despite their failure to meet the program's reciprocity requirements. And for months, they have been assured by various Biden administration officials that Israel could not meet the admission requirements of the program. So when news broke last week that the U.S. and Israel had signed an MOU advancing Israel's entry into the visa waiver program, as Jim Zogby wrote, quote, "It shouldn't have caught us by surprise, but it did," end quote. When I read the news, there were two people I immediately wanted to speak with about it, and we are very fortunate to be joined by both of them today. Dr. James Zogby co-founded the Arab American Institute in 1985 and continues to serve as its president. He is also the director of Zogby Research Services, a firm that has conducted groundbreaking surveys across the Middle East. For the past three decades, Dr. Zogby has served in leadership roles in the Democratic National Committee and served two terms as a President Obama appointee to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom. Jim Zogby also writes a weekly column published in 12 countries and is featured frequently in national and international media as an expert on Middle East affairs. Among his published books is the highly acclaimed Arab Voices. It is always an honor to welcome Jim Zogby back to Middle East in Focus.
Thanks, Esti. You make me sound better than I am, but thank you.
I don't know about that. Also joining our conversation is friend of the show, Sam Bahour. Sam is the managing director of Applied Information Management, a Palestinian company that specializes in business development with a focus on the information technology sector and startups. He was instrumental in the establishment of two publicly traded firms, the Palestine Telecommunications Company and Arab Palestinian Shopping Centers, or APSC. Sam is currently an independent director at the Arab Islamic Bank, PLC, a policy advisor at Al-Shabaka, and a board member at Just Vision. He writes frequently on Palestinian affairs and has been widely published in leading outlets. He's the co-editor of Homeland, an oral history of Palestine and Palestinians. I am always grateful to welcome Sam Bahour back to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Well, you are the two people I most wanted to talk to about this topic. Jim, you wrote in your column this week, quote, "For months, Biden administration officials held, like all other 40 countries in the program, Israel must meet the statutory requirements, including reciprocity, before being admitted. Yet the U.S. has signed this MOU when there has been no demonstrable change in Israeli behavior," end quote. So nevertheless, just days before the trial period, where a very short test period was supposed to start, news came that an MOU had been signed. Can you talk briefly about that trial period as a means to ascertain whether Israeli border practices actually meet the requirements of the U.S. visa waiver program?
Yeah, Esty. We were upset with the trial period to begin with. Upset because it was 30 days, and at one point they said maybe 45. We've been dealing with the issue for decades and have concrete evidence, myself personally included, and I'm sure Sam has his own personal stories as well, of the discriminatory treatment received. Giving the Israelis 30 days to be on their best behavior before we give a privilege that is only given to 40 other countries was bizarre. In addition to that, the way the trial was set up already dumbed the process down. It was only going to apply to 25 or 30,000 Palestinian Americans who already hold Palestinian identification, who are in the Israeli system. It was going to allow them only the opportunity to enter through Ben Gurion Airport. It was not going to do anything about the hundreds of thousands of other Palestinians who don't hold the ID, Arab Americans who obviously don't hold the ID, and others, including folks we know, who've been excluded because of their political beliefs. Ilhan Omar, as one example. And so it wasn't really a trial at all. It was sort of a birthday party musical chairs game where there's actually a chair for everybody in the room so nobody can lose. I mean, it was set up to show them, yeah, oh, you guys can do it. Oh, that's great. You know, it was sort of like giving a trophy to every kid on the Little League team, right? I mean, that which is a practice these days. What was more irritating than that was that they aborted the trial period and signed the memorandum of understanding even before the trial period started. One, two, the memorandum of understanding violates every statutory requirement in the process by saying basically that Israel gets to define what is reciprocity as far as they're concerned. So they get to define reciprocity as meeting their security concerns. Given what we know, that Ilhan Omar is a security threat, that Jim Zoghbi, who was working with Vice President Gore at the time and joining him, invited to join him at a dinner at the Knesset, represents a security threat, that my son, who was working at the State Department and had a diplomatic passport, represents a security threat and therefore has to be screened and harassed for 4 or 5 hours. I mean, you don't give the fox the right to make the determination of what provides security at the chicken coop. You actually have to have an objective measurement. Visa waiver reciprocity means I show up at your border, show my passport, and I'm welcomed in. That's what it's like when I go to UK. If to have Israel given the opportunity to screen me out even before I come and say, oh, well, we didn't deny him entry because we never gave him a visa in the first place. That's not reciprocity. That's basically the system as it currently is. And all that it really does is saves me the airfare. I get to not go and not lose money in the process, but it's not reciprocity. And it's therefore galling and bewildering that they think that they can get away with something so transparently violative of the law. It is the law.
And yet it seems that they have. Sam, the title of Jim's column this week is "For Arab Americans, Blue is Not Blue." Can you explain the double meaning in that title and discuss how the implementation plan described in the leaked MOU, which I believe the last time I checked, the State Department still has yet to confirm as the official document, discusses dealing with U.S.
citizens. By the
way,
they're saying they're not going to release it, which is even worse. They're screwing us over and they're not going to let us know how we got screwed over exactly.
Okay, they just made my point for me. Sam, can you tell us how that document discusses dealing with U.S. citizens traveling, let's say, from Gaza or the West Bank, and those who also, in addition to their U.S. passport, hold Israeli-issued Palestinian ID cards like yourself?
Sure. There's a lot in there. Blue is the color of our U.S. passports. And stating blue is blue, as the U.S. administration has been claiming to Israel for some time now, indicates that the U.S. would not accept Israel to discriminate against any U.S. citizen, Arab American or otherwise, who presents their blue passport at a point of entry and would be discriminated against. We have been hearing for years now that Israel discriminates. There's travel warnings from the U.S. that document that discrimination and clarify that American citizens should be prepared to be discriminated against. Well, then that MOU does a complete about face and says instead, we will codify Israel's non-reciprocity and continued discrimination of some U.S. passport holders, namely Arab Americans, Palestinian Muslims and Christians, Muslims in general, and maybe even some U.S. citizens that are critical of Israeli politics, all at the arbitrary calling of how the Israelis want to define a person without us knowing. This is the insult of the century, no doubt. Every American who still respects the rule of law should be outraged. If you allow me, Esti, I can simplify what is happening with a very quick analogy. It's as if a policeman witnesses a car severely swerving on the road. He turns on his siren and stops the car, asks the driver for his license. The policeman proceeds to ask the driver to take a sobriety test. The driver fails. The policeman runs the license to find if the driver has and finds out that the driver has a long record of drunk driving and currently has an active warrant out for his arrest. The policeman then returns to the driver and gives him a deal. He lets him drive 2 more miles, and if no severe swerving is observed, he can go on for free. This is what is happening with Israel through this MOU. A country with a horrendous record of discrimination, currently being called on by the world to be held accountable, and the Biden administration rewards it with a privilege. If this really happened with that policeman, he would be reprimanded, if not fired, or taken to jail. When it happens in politics in the United States, no one cares because elections are around the corner and the pro-Israeli lobby, AIPAC, is breathing down everyone's neck. It's a shame and embarrassing to all of us.
Great analogy. You're listening to Middle East in Focus on KPFK. I am so grateful to be joined today by longtime Palestinian rights advocate and president of the Arab American Institute, Dr. James Zoghbi, and Palestinian entrepreneur and businessman, Sam Bahour, a Palestinian-American living in the West Bank. We're discussing last week's announcement that the U.S. and Israel had signed a memorandum of understanding advancing Israel's entry into the U.S. visa waiver program in spite of recent assurances from Biden administration officials that Israel couldn't be admitted into the program because it does not meet the program requirements. Jim, on July 19th, Senators Chris Van Hollen and Jeff Merkley, Brian Schatz, and Peter Welch released a statement regarding the MOU with Israel, which included, quote, "We support Israel's candidacy to join the visa waiver program once it meets all of the requirements laid out in law. However, Secretary Blinken cannot and should not nominate Israel until it verifies it is in full compliance with these requirements, including equal treatment and freedom of travel for all U.S. citizens, regardless of national origin, religion, or ethnicity." This was affirmed with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's passage of an amendment last week prohibiting the secretary from nominating any country that subjects any citizen of the United States to separate entry rules or visa regulations or otherwise discriminates against a citizen of the United States on the basis of such United States citizen's race, religion, ethnicity, national origin, or membership in any other protected class recognized it by the United States law. Furthermore, as the State Department confirmed to us last week, Israel does not currently meet all the statutory and policy requirements for designation as a visa waiver policy country, end quote. Given your decades of experience in these matters, does the senator's statement, the passage of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's amendment last week, or the State Department confirmation that Israel does not currently meet the requirements of the visa waiver program give you any comfort that Israel will not be admitted to the program if they don't meet all the requirements that the other 40 countries have had to meet without exception.
No, it doesn't. It means, it tells me that there are some folks who have principles in the Senate, and there was also the Jackson letter in the House. The question now is to the test of their mettle will be, do they go to the mat now that the memorandum has been signed, and make it clear that that there'll be repercussions, or that they will take measures, further measures, if the U.S. goes forward with this. When we had, I'd say, some pretty heated conversations with both DHS and our U.S. ambassador to Israel, we were told, well, this is just provisional, and there'll be snapbacks if they don't fulfill the terms. And I laughed, actually was incredulous. It was a laugh born more of, oh, my God, this is bizarre. And ask the question, when have we ever snapped back anything? Once Israel gets it and pockets it, it's gone. I was around when the Foreign Arms Assistance Act was passed. I was around when the National Defense, you know, we have laws on human rights. We have the will of the American people is our money should not go to countries that violate human rights. It's been applied in Latin America. It was applied in South Africa. It was applied in the Philippines. It was applied in several places. And the State Department reports on human rights are very clear. Israel's a violator of human rights. You just read the damn report and you'll see it. It's all there. But it is honored more in the breach than in the observance. And so at one point I was asked to testify before the Foreign Affairs Committee on this issue. And I said, you know what? Just to be honest with yourselves, just repeal the damn law. That way you don't have to violate it every single year when you approve the Foreign Aid Act or give Israel another $3.3 or $3.8 or $4 billion a year. Just be honest with yourself. You're not going to apply the law. You're going to use the waiver. That will happen. The visa waiver is now going to be a congressional waiver or an administration waiver. And we're going to say, yeah, we know they're not doing it, but hey, what the hell? And that's why as an, you know, look, I've lots of policy issues with Israel, lots of policy issues with the United States government. This one is personal because it involves Arab, it involves me, it involves my family, it involves, you know, my community. It involves hundreds of people I can remember sitting in my office telling me their stories. People calling me from Jerusalem, telling me their stories in the airport, saying, what do I do? I can't get anybody at the embassy to respond. They're going to send me back. And I had nothing, you know, I would say to them, just come back and we'll file a report and we'll go to the State Department. And we did it time and time again and sat there with Assistant Secretaries of State and Madeleine Albright and Condoleezza Rice and, you know, I mean, I can go down the list of secretaries of state. I spoke with Bill Clinton about it. He actually referred me and actually at a state dinner, took me over to Ehud Barak and introduced me and said, I want you to listen to him. He's got an issue that involves your treatment of his community. No, that never happened. So am I confident that they recognize it? Sure, they know it. That's what makes this even more galling. If they didn't know it and were stupid, or had bad intelligence, they know Israel is not in a position to fulfill the requirements. And yet they've dumbed the requirements down so that in the memorandum of understanding, it's Israel gets to determine by its own security interests what becomes reciprocity. I mean, it's sort of like a marriage in which, you know, you're supposed to, the husband and wife are supposed to be faithful to each other, and you have a serial cheat as one of the partners who gets to define what faithful means. Sorry, Sam, I'm playing off of your wonderful metaphor, but it's the same kind of thing. We know that they're cheating. We know that they're not able to do it. And yet we say, you know, we're going to trust you to define it yourself, what you think is being reciprocal.
Sam, in January, while they were trying to negotiate their admission into the visa waiver program, the Israeli government announced new and even more onerous restrictions on visiting Palestinian Americans as part of their coordination of government activities in the territories, or COGAT rules. Can you describe the new COGAT procedures and how they are addressed or not addressed in the MOU, and whether they amount to an apartheid system for Americans traveling to Israel, depending on their identity?
Sure. First, one has to understand what is COGAT. Kogat is a unit of the Israeli Ministry of Defense, which is responsible for all affairs in the occupied territory in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. In short, it is where the CEO of occupation sits with all of his occupation managers. Kogat has been restricting access in and out of the West Bank and Gaza for decades. Back in 2009, we even started a grassroots campaign here called the RightToEnter.ts campaign. Kogat recently, about a year ago, issued a 62-page document. It was 90-some, and then it was reduced to 62 pages after some pushback. It's called the Procedure for Entry and Residence of Foreigners in Judea and Samaria Area. This is an extremely limiting set of discriminatory rules of who is allowed in and out of the West Bank. The document may be found online. It still is there. So it still applies to people like myself, who is, I'm an American citizen, but through marriage, I was awarded an Israeli-issued residency permit. So I'm in the Israeli system now as a Palestinian. And the fear is that if I start using, as per this MOU, my American passport to come in and out of Palestine through Israel, that this right-wing Israeli government is going to wake up one day and say, you're not really a Palestinian. You're an American coming and just visiting here, even though I live here and I've been here for 30 years, and take away my residency status here. And we are landowners, we're business owners, and this Israeli government is hard up to do exactly that, which is to strip people their right to be here. But there's a few basics that we need to keep in mind for the bigger picture. Let's keep in mind that the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza Strip are Israeli military occupied territory. Israeli law does not apply to us. International law, on the other hand, which does apply, levies an obligation on Israel to maintain a system of governance which is to the benefit of the people they occupy. The MOU does not do that. Also, the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem is an illegal embassy as per international law, as per the U.S. vote in the international system. Forcing Palestinian Americans who do not desire to interact with this illegal embassy in Jerusalem is something also that they need to look at. Lastly, Palestine is not Israel. Even, you know, the United States Special Representative for Palestinian Affairs, Hadi Amer, said as much in answering a question that I presented to him on a webinar at Americans for Peace Now, that Palestinian cities and villages are not Israel. So what does that mean? When someone wants to come and visit me, they land in Tel Aviv Airport, and they get a 90-day tourist visa by Israel. They get in a taxi, and they come to Ramallah to see me. Once they cross the checkpoint into the West Bay, which is about 30 minutes away from the airport, they are no longer in Israel. So they don't need 90 days. They need 30 minutes to arrive at a new place called Palestine. The MOU does not say what happens to that person visiting me or coming here to work or to teach in a university and wants to go back through the airport 1 year later. It's unclear what's going to be applied, because the 90 days would have finished. Are they going to say that we violated our visa and that make us never come back, put us on a blacklist? We have no idea, because we haven't read the document. Unless the document is presented to us, we don't know what the system that our own government signed on to is being applied. And that's horrendous.
Right. We have 1 minute left, but it's a very, very important question, Jim. Is there any role for American citizens to play in the outcome of this decision? At this point,
we have gotten conflicting advice as to whether or not we can make an equal protection complaint. The fact is, the Constitution ought to protect our rights as every other citizen. This is not a question of foreign policy, as I said. This is a question of the failure of our own government by signing an agreement with a foreign country that allows that country to violate our rights, not our rights in that country, but our rights as per the guarantee of the Secretary of State written in our passport to protect us, is an issue that I think has to be explored. Every Secretary of State I've dealt with, up to Tony Blinken, has said, an American is an American. We will defend your rights. That's the guarantee written in the passport. Obviously, you never dealt with the folks in the Trump administration, but every other one has maintained that. What I don't understand is what Blinken is thinking when he denies his responsibility as Secretary of State to protect my rights as an American citizen, as per every other American citizen. I don't get it. And so, yeah, there is, I think, an equal protection issue here.
I can't thank the both of you enough for taking the time to be with us today. I have a feeling that this is not the last conversation that we're going to have on this topic. As Jonathan Kitab wrote and the Arab Center in Washington, D.C. published on July 10th, quote, Israel may choose to conduct itself as an apartheid state and to systematically discriminate against its citizens or its subject populations. As numerous international and Israeli human rights organizations have stated, the United States may also choose not to directly challenge those practices, but it should not allow, without protest, Israel's discrimination against American citizens under any circumstances. To grant Israel exemption from U.S. regulations and to acquiesce to a system of declared discrimination not only makes the United States complicit in that system against its own citizens, but also contradicts both the letter and the spirit of the visa waiver program, which requires reciprocity from countries participating in it, end quote. Once again, I want to thank our guests, President of the Arab American Institute, Dr. James Zoghbi. You can read his column and sign up for weekly Coffee and a Column conversations at AAIUSA.org. And you can follow him on Twitter. His handle is at JJZ1600. I also want to thank renowned Palestinian businessman Sam Bahour. You can read his blog at epalestine@blogspot.com and follow him on Twitter. His handle is at Sam Bahour. That's SamBahour. I also want to thank Mark Maxwell for his production support today. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.